Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa, and I'm so glad you're here with me. I'm having this really weird experience. It's a gorgeous day in Seattle. I'm looking out my window. I can see mountains in the distance. It's blue skies. It's sunny. And it's also the very beginning of the coronavirus outbreak. And it's one of these things where I'm not sure where life is going from here. You know, where are we at the tip of an iceberg or the tipping point or on the verge of life being completely different? And here I am recording a podcast today and interviewing somebody in one situation. And by the time this episode comes out, life could be very, very different. I have no idea of knowing what the impacts are going to be and how life is going to feel to all of us. So in a similar way, my guest today, you know, life was one way and then suddenly was another. And it, you know, it strikes me that this can happen. Of course, this can happen to any of us at any time. We never know what's going to happen. And the phone rings and we get some news, or we go to the doctor and we get some news, or whatever happens in life turns on a dime. And it's really challenging to be out, you know, not knowing when that's going to happen or how things will evolve. So my guest, Kim Costello, is a fellow therapist, a fellow sex therapist here in Seattle that I've known for a while. And she has MS. And it came really suddenly for her. Doesn't always happen that way, but for her, it was really a dramatic onset. And her life was different very quickly. And luckily, you know, her treatment's been quite effective at keeping it at bay and her in remission, but she never knows when life is going to change. And she works with a lot of people with MS as well. And she does actually a lot of work with MS advocacy, working with physicians and things, trying to increase a conversation about sexuality. Because as she's going to talk about, you know, sex is a huge part of our quality of life. And it's really, really important to stay connected to that in ourselves and stay connected with our partners as we're facing a disease like that. I hope you get a ton out of the episode. I think all of the concepts and the conversation are relevant, whether you have MS or not, whether you've got any sort of limiting disease or not. These are really important ideas to keep sex front and center and valued in our lives together. Thanks for being with me. The Better Sex Podcast is brought to you by the Sex Without Stress online course. It's a course for couples to escape the cycle of disappointment, avoidance, and pressure in your sex life. So if you're in a pretty good relationship, there's a lot of love and goodwill, but sex is your struggle, this could be for you. You work in the privacy of your own home and at your own pace to create a sex life you can both look forward to. If you want to learn more, go to sexwithoutstress.com/program. Kim, thank you so much for being on the show with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really glad we finally get to do this. We've talked about it for a while, and I'm glad it's happening.
Oh, me too. I'm so very excited.
Could you start just sort of by introducing yourself and why this, you know, why you are my guest today to talk about this?
Yes. So I am a marriage and family therapist, and I'm also a certified ASECT sex therapist, and I have MS. I've been living with multiple sclerosis for 13 years.
Okay.
And so when my daughter had just been born, it's been about 6 months after she was born, I stopped nursing and I totally went numb on the left side of my body. I couldn't hold a pen. I couldn't walk. I couldn't swallow my own saliva.
Oh my gosh.
It was pretty scary. So I thought I had was having a stroke. But
so
actually,
this was a sudden thing. This was not a gradual kind of creep.
Yeah,
up.
This was sudden.
Okay.
And then I picked up my daughter and I almost dropped her because I just had lost all control. And so I went and I had 8 lesions on my brain for an MRI. And so I was diagnosed right away with MS and started on drugs, which has helped me stay in remission for the last 12 years. Wow. And I've got back all my function. That is not common, though, with people with MS.
Okay.
And what people with MS have to deal with a lot is the uncertainty that at any time something can happen. They don't know when.
Yeah. Is it unusual to have it come on so sudden and so severe? Obviously, I don't know as much about this. Is it not normally a sort of a gradual kind of impact?
Usually it is. Usually people have it and they don't know. So if, for example, they feel like they have a numbness in their arm and they go to the chiropractor and they try to get it adjusted.
Yeah.
But then it keeps coming back and then something else happens.
Okay.
Mine was pretty severe.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm imagining the doctors were kind of surprised by, wow, suddenly, you know, this is happening.
They were surprised. They, you know, let me know that if I wanted to have another child, that they couldn't guarantee that I'd be disabled. So immediately it changed life very, very quickly. New mom.
Is it related to pregnancy or birth?
Well, there's not a lot of research, but there tends to be some correlation to after when a woman stops nursing, that hormone. And there's still research that needs to be done with it, but that is what happened to me. And I've met some other women too who've had that as well.
Okay, so there's some sort of triggering event maybe related to hormones that when you stopped nursing, it was like, wow, okay. All right. And so your remission at this point being so... I mean, you know, gosh, it's on or off for you. That's unusual, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Most people are living with some sort of symptoms on a regular basis.
And I do. I do have, you know, if I get too hot, which is people with MS have difficulty with heat, I can lose my sight. I still have difficulty swallowing at times.
Wow.
I can still get some difficulty walking or, especially in the summer when I'm overheated, I can feel tingling up and down the side of my body. Or I'm aware, like I'm blinking. Nobody's aware that they're blinking.
Right. not until you say that. Now I'm thinking.
Yeah. Right. I'm blinking. Yeah. So that is, you know, something that I have to deal with for the rest of my life. And who knows when another symptom could come up.
Yeah, so that's what you're saying. People with this diagnosis are, you're sort of always waiting for the shoe to drop, it sounds like. When is something going to amp up or occur?
Exactly. You have to live with a lot of the unknown. And then how do you do that? It kind of raises your anxiety a little bit. And then, you know, you're sick, but you might not look sick. So if you look at me, most people don't think that I'm sick.
Right, right.
Yeah. I mean, I can walk, I can do all of these things, but I still choke on my food.
Yeah.
I still, you know, heat bothers me.
Yeah.
I can lose my sight for a little bit. Not everybody is in a wheelchair, but that's the fear. The fear is this is where we can end up and it's going to alter our quality of life.
Right. And is MS, is it generally progressive that it's?
It depends. There's several types. So there are types where it's very progressive and people get rapidly decline. And then there's other kinds, like with what I have is that I have what's called an exacerbation. And then there's a remission and then another exacerbation.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends. It kind of shows up differently for everybody.
Right.
The great thing is they have great drugs out there now.
Okay.
That really hold things at bay. So really, for anybody who has MS, really work very closely with your neurologist. There's a lot of help out there, some really good studies now. But they have side effects.
Yeah, I was going to ask about, I mean, you know, specifically, I want to be talking to you about the impacts on sex, you know, sexuality, relationships, because obviously this has got a huge impact on life and anxiety, and people's first concern needs to just be about their health, you know, but what are the impacts on sex? And then do the medications also have impacts? Like, what are we looking at in terms of impact, you know, in your intimate relationship?
Well, the big thing is that a lot of people who have MS are depressed because of that unknown, and also because it attacks our brain, right?
Yeah.
Depending on where it attacks can affect on not only how we function and how we see things, but how we process and depression and things like that. So a lot of times doctors will put us on an SSRI.
Okay.
An SSRI for depression, like Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, things of those sorts are wonderful for our brain, but they do have a side effect of low libido.
Right.
Okay, so that's whether we have MS or not. People who are on SSRIs are going to battle, possibly.
Right.
If it's going to affect their libido.
Right.
The other medications don't necessarily, that I know of, affect libido, but what affects more is fatigue.
Yeah.
So fatigue is the biggest part that people complain about with MS. I'm tired, I'm exhausted. The second one is sexual dysfunction.
Of what type?
So there's several, but like sexual dysfunction, 85% of women say they have some form of sexual dysfunction, and 90% of men do.
Okay, with MS.
With MS.
Okay, that's huge.
That is a huge. So the first is people with MS are going to say that I'm tired.
Right.
Okay. Then the second, 85% of women with MS are going to say I have a sexual dysfunction.
Yeah.
And 90% of men are going to say they have some form of sexual dysfunction.
Wow.
Okay. So let me give you some of these statistics here. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
For women, 37 to 45% have difficulty reaching orgasm. 37 to 45% of women have trouble orgasming.
Right.
36 to 48% decrease in vaginal lubrication.
Right.
24 to 47 experience a reduced genital sensation. I can't feel my clitoris. I can't feel my labia.
Right.
All of that is numb.
Yeah. Okay. Related potentially then to difficulty reaching orgasm, right?
Correct.
You can't receive the stimulation. Yeah.
And then 31 to 74% experience decreased libido. 74%. Now that's with women. Okay.
Yeah. And when you're talking about decreased lubrication, then I'm also imagining, you didn't mention pain, but I'm imagining potentially people are having pain if they're not lubricating like they're used to or not getting aroused like they used to.
And pain is not only in the vaginal area. Pain is also within their body. For example, there's a lot of spasticity issues, so it becomes very tight. And their inability to move their legs as much. So I had one lady go to a neurologist who was a client of mine who said, you know, I can't open my legs.
Wow.
So help me open up my legs because they're tight.
Yeah.
So just even that kind of pain, laying on my back, sitting up, sitting in a chair, standing.
Yeah.
All of that becomes an issue when we start talking about having intercourse.
Wow. Those are huge numbers.
Huge. Let me tell you about the men. Are you ready?
I'm holding on.
Hold on here. Up to 75% of men have trouble maintaining an erection.
Yeah.
18 to 50% have ejaculation difficulty.
Hmm.
37% anorgasmia. 37% of men cannot have an orgasm.
Wow.
39% is a decrease in libido. Now, we don't have statistics, or I don't, on people who have bowel movement issues because MS affects everything, right?
Right, right.
So we might not have those statistics because people either were not asking or they're embarrassed to say that I lose my bowels during intercourse and I don't want to go there.
Yeah. I talk a lot in my, you know, like in my book, my podcast about sexual avoidance.
Because, yeah.
You know, when sex is hard, of course we avoid it. I mean, and you are bringing up a whole range of kinds of things that get people avoiding intimacy with their partner, you know.
Absolutely.
That are creating challenges like that. Yeah. And losing your bowels would be one of those things, like, right? This is not something we'd.
That is huge. And the other thing that is, it's really hard when the disease progresses, or even not, when your partner becomes your caregiver.
Yeah, that's a whole other issue, isn't it? Right
now, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
Right. I got to remove my hat from the caregiver role to be a lover.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so many people just avoid this topic when it comes to multiple sclerosis and sex because there's so many hurdles.
Right. And do you know, I mean, the statistics that you just gave me, which again, I'm still sort of stunned by how high those numbers are those for MS alone, or is that, you know, sort of on the SSRIs that you might be on?
I mean, no, these are MS alone.
Okay. And then if you add SSRIs, sex could become even more difficult.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Even more difficult. Yeah. This is just MS related. And there's more studies that are being done. The University of Washington, the MS Center, has another whole bunch of studies going on right now about sexuality. There's just not a lot.
Yeah.
Because again, the medical community is going to be concerned about, can you walk?
Yeah.
Can you function?
Yeah.
And my big push to the medical community, which I've talked to them, you know, at conferences and things like that, is quality of life also is about sexuality.
Right. Right.
There's something about touch. There's something about connection that changes our brain to have us be able to deal with difficult situations.
You know, you know this too, right? Sex can be the first thing tossed out of the conversation with all kinds of illnesses, right? Or with aging, nursing homes or whatever, right? It's as if this part of us is optional or expendable instead of just essential, you know?
It is so, this is a non-negotiable for me.
Yeah.
If I'm going to live a healthy, happy life, if I'm going to be able to deal with the uncertainties of this disease, having connection with my partner is a non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for many, they just say that it is a negotiable.
Right.
There's so many things that are holding me back from being intimate. There's so many fears. There's so many insecurities.
Right. Right. And I'm imagining now, I have, knock on wood, I have not received some sort of diagnosis like this where I'm living with something chronically, you know, for the rest of my life. But I kind of imagine there's a phase when you first get this news, or if your disease ramps up, that there are these adjustment periods, your brain goes to survival and prognosis and treatment and, you know, and then you can maybe get the space to be like, oh, wait, now, how do I maximize my quality of life and my sexuality with my partner? Yeah.
There are a lot of support groups for those of us that have been newly diagnosed, because it is very frightening. I didn't know anything about MS. I thought I was going to die.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my goodness, I'm going to die. I'm going to leave my husband with this child. I'm never going to see my child get married and, you know, dance with her on the dance floor. I'm not going to see any of that. I thought I'm dead. I'm not dead.
Yes.
And I have, you know, MS does not kill us. We die usually from other complications, but it does hinder.
Right.
You know, and it does, I had to come to terms with that I might be rolling Katie down the aisle.
Yeah.
In a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Instead of walking her down.
Right.
And that, you know, I was 30, devastating.
Yeah.
Absolutely. World shaking, devastating.
Yeah.
So there is this process of grief where I thought for sure they got the x-rays mixed up, the MRI. I mean, I was for sure that was not my brain with all those lesions.
Wow.
So that, you know, Kubler-Ross's process of grief, of denial and anger. And all, like, I went through all of
bargaining, right.
All yeah. Those oh, oh yeah. yeah. I was yeah. like, God, I will do whatever you want me to do if you just heal me. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what got me through was love for my partner.
Yeah.
Hi, it's Jessa here, taking just a quick break. Thanks for listening so far. I wanted to let you know about the sex quiz that I've put together called How Healthy Is Your Sex Life? I've taken a close look at the typical ways that I see couples get into trouble with sex, including avoidance, neglect, negativity, distraction, and boredom. And the free quiz will score your individual results based on these factors. And then I provide my recommendations and ideas, including my top 10 sex tips, which will help you make instant improvement. If you'd like to take the quiz and see how healthy your sex life is, you can do it right now at sexhealthquiz.com.
Like, I know that part of what you want to talk about is advocating for yourself in your medical, you know, with your treatment providers, right? So maybe you could speak to that, but also how much help can they be around sexual functioning? Like, I really want to talk about what do people do? And obviously people's symptoms are all over the map. What kind of, what part of their brain is being affected? But, you know, if we could get into some of the tips or ideas or support for people in terms of how to maximize their sexual connection with their partner.
So if you go to a neurologist at this time, my experience has been they're going to kind of look at us like a deer in headlights. Okay.
If you talk about sex.
If we talk about sex.
Yeah.
But I've been working on them. I've been doing conferences, and maybe I think the tide is changing. Okay. Yeah. So they might not look at you as a deer in headlights, but what they're going to do is they're going to try to help you with the symptom. So for example, if bowel issues is a concern, they can help you with medications with that.
Okay.
If spasticity is a problem, they can help you with that. If fatigue and you're having trouble sleeping, they can give you medications for that.
Okay.
So those will help the symptoms, but then you've got to overcome kind of, how do I step into this? When do I have sex so that I'm, you know, not so tired? How can we plan it? That doesn't seem erotic.
Right.
You know, because we're planning. That's where a sex therapist would be super, super important.
Yeah.
Right. Because the doctor's not going to be able to help you with that. They can help you with all those other, the symptoms of. But then to think outside the box, right? And have you and your partner kind of talk about what kind of connection can occur. You need help.
Yeah, because a neurologist is not going to facilitate that conversation with your partner about opening up your fears about sex, your changes in functioning, right? Like that's so big for people anyway, you know,
huge.
That aren't facing these kinds of challenges.
And they don't have the time. Besides that, they don't,
right.
They're not skilled in it.
Yeah.
They, you know, insurance, unfortunately, says you've got 45 minutes.
Yeah.
For a specialist. Maximize that time.
Right. Right. So what are the elements? And again, I know we're talking to a broad range of people, but are there steps or themes of what's important to be doing with a partner to really support your sex life?
Yeah. The first thing is that we have to expand the definition of sex first and primarily.
Okay.
Which is, it's not just about genital to genital contact.
Right.
Right. It's about flirting. It's about the touch. It's about cuddling. It's about holding hands. It's about the passionate kiss. And really learning how to bring those moments embodied so that we can feel them in our bodies and get this deep sensation of connection and pleasure.
Yeah.
So we just have to expand that it's not about genital to genital contact and it's not about orgasm.
Okay.
It is about connection, pleasure. I like to add mindfulness because I can walk by my husband and tickle him in the back, and that's just a normal thing, right? Very common. But there's something about walking behind my husband, tickling his back, tell him that he's sexy, and to feel in my body what it feels like to be erotic that moment, and to have him pause and feel in his body that kind of pursuit of me to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So slowing it down so that those times are really accentuated, like they're really powerful.
Okay.
So I always joke and I say, it's, you know, save for your partner and really be mindful for anything you would not do to the Starbucks barista.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever we don't do with them, then we, unless we're dating them, then we, you know, or want to have a relationship with them, then we slow it down and think, okay, this is a point of connection.
Right. And really it's a form of sex.
It's a form of sex.
It's you. It's special between you and your partner. You're there for it. It's pleasure and connection.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing that we want to do is, unfortunately, because fatigue is so, you know, so difficult. And I mean, we're not talking about the kind of fatigue that you've worked all day and you go home and you're just, I don't have it in me. We're talking about, I can't function.
Yeah.
Like it takes everything for me to get to the bathroom and back, that kind of thought feeling, you know?
Right, right.
So we have to plan. We have to plan for the times that we feel most alive. Is it the morning?
Okay. So you're sort of accommodating to, when is my energy highest? When am I the least fatigued?
Correct.
Okay.
And a lot of people bristle with this because it becomes not organic.
Yeah. You know,
there's a grief with that.
Right. But, you know, it's not only people with a chronic illness that that really need this advice, right? Like I talk to people all the time that just have two jobs and children, and it's like, it's not happening spontaneously. It's like you do have to intentionally create these windows of opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You have to put it on the calendar. Sometimes you have to say Friday night or Friday afternoon at 2 is our sexy time. You know, you have to schedule it, and that's okay.
Okay.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
So where is that happening? You know, when am I tired? When am I not? When can I maximate, you know, connection?
Okay.
Now, again, I'm not talking about genital to genital connection.
Yeah.
I'm talking about making out, filling each other up, giving each other sexy massages.
Okay.
Okay. If some form of penetration or genital to genital contact occurs, awesome. But that's not only what I want to focus on.
Right.
And then the other thing we really want to do is be able to talk about what comes up for us, our fears.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm hurting, the last thing my partner's going to want to do is have sex with me thinking that he could hurt me, right?
Right.
So being really honest about those kinds of conversations. I am sore, but if you rub me here, maybe that would help. Or let's put a heating pad.
Yeah.
And kind of working together to try to make it a great experience for the both of you.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking about, even if our genitals don't respond the way they used to, there's trouble getting aroused or keeping an erection or something like that, doesn't necessarily mean we can't feel things. I mean, I know that sometimes you can't feel things, but there could be things that are pleasurable that we might do with body parts, you know, even if it stops short of what we used to do with them, right?
Exactly.
Like we don't have to write off our genitals if we would like to share them and play with them.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's really healthy to keep doing that. We want blood flow to go down to our genital areas.
Yeah.
So solo masturbation, partnered sex, or anything like that, any kind of stimulation down to the genital area is healthy.
Yeah.
We want to keep, besides that it's fun and it's great for our self-esteem and our mind and all of that stuff, we want to keep blood flowing.
Right. Keep those tissues supple, movable, blood flow. Yeah. Thriving as much as you can.
Right. And so we're talking a lot about partnered sex, but, you know, also those that are single, you know, this is super, super important to not be afraid to masturbate.
Yeah.
To enjoy that kind of part of you.
Right.
Because it helps with mood, because it helps with self-exploration, because it gives blood flow to our genitals. All of those are great.
Right. Right.
right? So if we're not partnered with MS, that's an important aspect to a healthy life as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I make the point too that it's also wonderfully healthy to masturbate if you are partnered, right? It's not, yes. It's not one or the other. It's like,
yes.
You know,
yeah. It's and.
Right. Right.
Right. And yes. So masturbation should be done all the time. No matter what.
So you're getting to your job and things like that, right?
Yeah.
What kind of advice do you give couples, or how do you talk to them if generally one person has MS, the other person may not have any sexual dysfunction, right? Their body is ready to go. Like how do you talk to people about bridging that gap? If I can't have, you know, genital contact, or I can't have intercourse the way I used to or whatever, but my partner really is ready. How do you facilitate that conversation about how people can still share sexuality?
First, I allow space for grief. I think it's super important for grief to happen, because once grief is there and can be held, then you can move on to problem solving. Right. So we comfort each other first and then we problem solve.
Yeah.
So once we've comforted each other and we've made space for that, then what we find out is that the person who does not have sexual dysfunction actually probably has had the best sex, can have the best sex they've ever experienced, because they're opening up their mind to different avenues. Right. Mm-hmm. They're not just saying it needs to look one way.
Yeah.
They're exploring, they're willing to change, they're willing to try something new, they're willing to think outside the box. All of that is very exciting, super arousing.
Yeah.
Right? So if we can frame it with that, like, yes, there it's going to look different, and there's a grief with that. And we're going to think outside the box. We're going to have 1,000 things that you guys can do together. You're going to have the best sex of your life, because it's not just going to be about orgasm. It's going to be about a daily erotic playfulness. That is a big one for me.
Yeah.
Like, how am I today erotically being playful with my husband?
Hmm.
Okay. It is for me. Again, it's a non-negotiable for me.
Yeah.
Okay. It can be with words. It can be with touch. I use all the senses. How can I be playful erotically towards my partner?
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of life where you are totally embodying eroticism, whatever it looks like, and you're making space for it, is like the best sex on the planet.
I was going to say, it's really striking me as such an opportunity. I mean, obviously, it's got to be a hard diagnosis to receive and a hard thing to live with. And yet you're really invited to sort of rethink all of this, right? And I'm thinking of all the clients that I work with who are not thinking, how can I be erotically playful today?
Yeah.
You know, and everything works fine, but this is just not the, it really invites people in there to, how do I really prioritize this and embrace this and maximize this?
Yeah. And most people, I talk about it a lot in my practice. I call it simmering, and I use like a little crock pot.
Right. Right.
You know, and I say, okay, we put the stew in the crock pot. And then by like 7 a.m., I'm like, ooh, it smells good. And
right.
By 10 o'clock. And then by 11, I'm like, oh yeah.
Right.
And by 7, I'm like, nobody talk to me. I'm eating my stew. And so it's that little things of, how can I text my partner? And, you know, there's always rules around text to make sure you're not sending it to the wrong person and what you're sending and things like that.
Right.
What can I, you know, I'm a big fan of sticky notes, you know, writing a sticky note in the shower and saying you're the most handsomest or the most sexiest woman I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That's an erotic moment.
Right. Right.
Right. I came out of my job one day after working. It was like 9 p.m. You know how late we work, Jessa. It's hard, right? And I come out and I open my car door and there's a note on my seat, and I freaked out because it's 9 p.m.
Right.
And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm alone. Somebody broke in my car. Somebody did break in my car. It was my husband.
Uh-oh.
And he wrote, "You are the most sexiest woman I've ever seen in my whole life. I can't wait till you come home to me."
Wow.
Okay. So he was driving by my office, saw my car, stopped, wrote me a note. So yep. those are simmering moments, right?
Right, right.
How right. do I intentionally stop and let my partner, let the people that I know and that I love say, I adore you.
Yeah.
The world is better because you're in mine.
Right. And what's really striking me in this conversation is this is not something you are doing for your husband's benefit. Like, oh my gosh, I'm sick. I need to make sure he's okay. You're talking about this is for your quality of life and your wholeness as a person.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think people can get in a mindset, especially if they're struggling with desire, like this is something I need to do or my partner's going to leave me or be unhappy or whatever. And it's like, no, embrace this because it matters for you.
Absolutely. It feels like, you know, it can easily fall into obligatory sex.
Right.
And obligatory sex is so damaging.
Yeah.
I mean, I love my husband. I want him to be happy. I love myself too.
Right.
I want myself to feel good.
Yeah.
I want my neurons to keep going. I don't want to fall into depression.
Right. Right. Yeah. What we don't want is what I think of as sacrificial sex. Right.
I don't want sacrificial sex. Right.
Right. Right. Right. So the last thing in my mind, I will ask you if there's anything else you want to cover, but this idea of going from caregiver to lover. You know, do you have tips for that? Like, well, how do you talk to people about how to make that transition?
So that's super, super, super hard because yeah. think about if you're, you know, especially if the disease progresses, right? And you're helping somebody bathe or wipe themselves after they have a bowel movement.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're wanting to make out. Okay. So what I do is I really try to help people kind of put days and moments kind of like into a box, like right here for 10 minutes, I'm going to be the caregiver. I'm going to do what needs to be done. I'm going to take showers. And then I'm going to put down that hat and I'm going to move to playfulness. Now in this role, one of the things that I find that's very, very hard for people is that when they're the caregiver, they forget to talk to their partner about their own struggles. Mm. They just say, I can't share that. He or she's going through too much. This is too hard for them. Okay. So, and I always tell them, don't rob our ability to help you. I don't steal that from me. I might be limited, but I want to be able to help. Right. So if my partner comes to me and tells me about his difficulties, then I'm going to feel good. I'm going to be able to move into the caregiver role, giving my partner permission not to be cared for.
Yeah, that mutuality seems like that leveling of the playing field. Like you might help me one way, I help you a different way, but because we're helping each other, it seems like that would be a little bit less caregiving and more like, you know, like one directional. Yeah, yeah.
More yeah.
like a partnership.
Yeah. So, and that is a big thing that people go into is like, oh, he or she has MS. Oh, they're in so much pain. I'm not going to tell them anything about how this is affecting me.
Right.
I'm not going to talk to them about what's been going on at work. I'm going to hide from them the financial stress. No,
right.
Share it.
Right. Okay.
Do it as a team.
Yeah.
Okay. Because then it removes the power dynamic of that I'm the broken one.
Yeah.
And you're the healthy one.
Right.
Right. No, we're both doing this journey together.
Yeah.
Okay. And it allows me to move into a caregiver role maybe differently.
Right. Right. Yeah. And again, that mutuality would open up sexuality more, it seems to me.
Right.
Right? Like it's not so, yeah, one directional.
Yes. But it's difficult. So first I say, hey, you've got to share with your partner emotionally. Let them step up. It makes us feel good to be able to help others.
Right.
Let us, you know, give us the opportunity.
Yeah.
Then when you are doing that hard caregiver stuff, because it is hard, you give yourself those 10, 15 minutes to be like, oh, this is hard. And then allow yourself to just let loose and have fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So kind of splitting that up.
Right. Is there anything else we didn't cover that you wanted to mention?
I don't think so. The National MS Society, they have chapters throughout the nation. They're amazing.
Okay.
The Multiple Sclerosis Association of America. I work a lot with them hands on hand. They can give you free healthcare stuff, like, for example, cooling vests in the summer so that you can keep your body temperature cool. They'll give you that stuff for free.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They'll also pay twice a year for an MRI. So if finances are hard, you can go to the National MS Society. Sometimes they pay for therapy. Hmm. And the Multiple Sclerosis Association of America is phenomenal for those things too. So in this disease, a lot of times it feels like we're alone because it's so heavy. You're not.
Yeah.
Use the team that you have. Talk to your neurologist, talk to these communities out there, get involved, and find a great therapist.
Yeah. Speaking of a great therapist, Kim, where do people find you?
Well, I'm in Seattle and I'm in Lake Stevens, and you can find me at Healing Moments Counseling.
Great. I'll share all those links too in the show notes so people can.
Yeah, sure.
Great. Well, thank you so, so much.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly Get to Know You and Question and Answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that. Become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.